On today's episode of The Back of the Bird, we sit down with Garrett Billings, formerly of the Toronto Rock and a few other franchises. We chat about his career, but also have a great chat just about lacrosse in general, the professional game. We chat about rules, chat about skill development for kids, and a lot of really great subjects. A really good conversation with Garrett. We also chat about the NLL playoff scenarios a little bit, Paulie's new home in Banyatland, and just chop it up. Let's get into it. This is episode 114 of The Back of the Bird.
Take your first ride and run, baby, run. If you want a sign, this is it. You're mad, your magic, you're as hot as a gun. You wanna play with fire, consider this. You'll chase the thrill if it's worth the hit. Cause you never ever wanna work for it. Take your first ride and run, baby, run. You got a spine of steel and a roar of thunder. Yeah, you make me drown. Yeah, you're pulling me under.
Alrighty, this is episode 114. Back the Bird. We're down Lomi today. He's on the road for a doubleheader to finish off the year. But, Paulie, what's going on?
Nothing, buddy. Yeah, obviously I was gone last week, had a little wife work trip to Mexico. So it was down there, just tough for the time change. And we had they had work dinners or whatever. So yeah, it would have been tough to tell my wife I had to duck out to jump on a pot at the hotel. But, yeah, super cool week. Nice to get away. First trip for us since having kids. So yeah, it was good, man. And obviously, you know, it being a free trip, we walked out of there with a $70 bill. So it was nice, man. It was crazy. I'll say, again, we would never be able to afford this place. Like we sat down, we were there for four nights, and then the one night, the dinner wasn't covered, but they give you a per diem or whatever, so you charge to your room. So we're sitting down there, and for those who are listening, not to toot my own horn, but it was the Nobu resort. So everyone knows, not everyone, but there's the Nobu restaurants all over, super high end, blah, blah, blah. So anyways, we're looking at the wine list, and then the Dory's boss is like, hey, Paul, just turn to page 9. We're going to get that bottle halfway down. So go down, I get to page 9, and this wine list, literally there was a wine from every part of the world. So get to page 9 and I go down. And it's a bottle of Screaming Eagle. It's a high end. Actually, it's the owner of Colorado, Stan Kroenke. It's his winery. Guess how much this bottle of wine was?
$1,000?
$13,000.
What, $13,000?
Yeah, man. Yeah, $13,000. We didn't get it.
It's a down payment. Yeah,
it's just... Talk about things you can't fathom, but I mean, I guess life goals that you can get to a point where you spend $15,000 on a 750 milliliter bottle of wine. As far as you, it's just give me a taste. I got to feel, see what $13,000. Yeah, it was wild. It was fun though, man. And then, yeah, just back. And then obviously we clinched playoffs, and then, you know, we got another game this weekend in Vegas. So yeah, man, just... Again, everything's wrapping up. Obviously, there's a bunch of movement that can happen, for you guys to get in, and there's still movement for us to in standing. So I guess to tie a bow on it, the unified standings couldn't have gone any better for the league, I guess, right? To have this in the last week where there's five teams vying for five spot or three spots, and then still movement from 3 to 8 is wild, man. And again, shout out to your boy Shemlax, who broke it all down. How you can even figure that out. So I was it was funny. I was in the car with my mom this week. We took the kids to gymnastics, and I think my kids were sleeping. So I was actually just looking at the scenarios. And my mom's and she likes to read articles more on me or Dan. Oh, someone's saying something nice about you. It's no. I was like, oh, she's like, what'd you read? I'm like, oh, just the playoff scenario. She's like, oh, can you send that to me? I'm like, mom, it's going to make your head explode. She's like,
yeah.
okay, I don't want to read it. I'm like, yeah, you won't get it. Like, it's, but crazy that he can break that down like that, man. Pretty cool.
Yeah. If you don't know what Paulie's referencing, Shem Lax, working for Lacrosse Culture Daily. So partners now, and did a great piece on all of the different scenarios. There are many, and it's crazy that like all this Tortorella Flyers stuff happened, like something like that could happen.
Yeah. Like
Saturday. So,
yeah. And it's like, so do you have someone watching? Like, so again, I don't know if people like heard, but like, he didn't know, right, that something happened that they didn't have to pull a goalie essentially. So it's like, for some teams, like, are you going to have like the GM watching games and then like somehow relaying information like, hey, okay, we need to pull a goalie. Hey, don't, like, we're good. We can lose this one. Like, not that you ever want to lose. Like, but just a crazy scenario that kind of wouldn't get to like someone in the NHL, like a head coach.
Yeah, it's absurd. I think unless I don't think there's any rules against having people tuned into the other games. So like, you'd be crazy not to. The only difference would be that without the difference in points between wins in overtime and wins in regulation, like, we don't have that, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, there's no scenario where you wouldn't just need to win.
You know? Yeah, true. Yeah, 100%.
I guess that probably wouldn't happen, but I mean, I guess the only scenario would be if you think that goal differential is going to come into it, so you would pull your goalie up a guy or up a couple goals to try to go more goals.
Yeah, true.
But I don't think it's going to get to goal differential. I don't know. Read the piece. I read it thoroughly and still only have – I just read our part of it basically. So,
again, I think for most teams, it comes down to, like, you just got to win. If you're vying for this spot, like, you – if you win, then at least you – give yourself a chance, right? I think that's, like you say, where it comes in our league, it's a little bit different. As long as you win, then you can kind of like be like, hey, we did our part, like, we were supposed to win. And then if the other chips fall that you still like lose out, it's like, okay, well, you know, what more could we have done, right?
Right. And all you can ask for is to control your own destiny, obviously, which is
exactly 100%.
Yeah, man, there's a wide range of, and obviously a bunch of the teams who are, a couple of the teams who are playing in it with real stakes left are playing against teams who standings wise don't have stakes left. Now, I don't think that makes as much of a difference as people might think it does, but you never know. And I agree, dude, the league's got to be pumped about it. The interesting thing too is, let's just see how the weekend plays out, but it's stressful times for a lot of us. Like, we're right in the mix. We could host a game still, and we could miss the playoffs, which is absurd. Wow.
Yeah.
So how's it? We haven't really chatted a whole lot since you got traded. But how's it been in Bandit Land? It's like, you guys 19,000 on the weekend. Pretty cool. Kind of think it's going to be like that for every home game you have left.
Yeah, it's been great, man. Obviously, like, you know, it's a huge advantage. So obviously, yeah, we'd love to have a home playoff game, but yeah, no, it's been great, man. You know, obviously it's kind of crazy, like getting traded and then all that stuff that comes with it. But, you know, again, listening to this interview, like Garrett Billings, he got to have a cup of coffee in Buffalo, and, you know, you talk about great organizations and stuff, people that do it right. Like, Buffalo's up there. And again, as an athlete, like, you love playing in front of fans, right? It's not the end all be all, but it adds to the experience of being, you know, a professional athlete. So the two home games we've had are 18 and 19,000, right? So it's been kind of everything that's been advertised, and it's been great, man. So just, you know, we're trying to, you know, keep rolling here, but it's been a pretty smooth transition, and it's been a lot of fun, to be honest. And again, it kind of comes back to two, like, had Dory and the kids both home games. My mom's got to come to the home game. So again, like, that's stuff, like, again, listen to this interview, like, that's stuff that makes playing as you get older more special too. Like, other than competing and winning, like, having your kids in the stands and watching their dad, you know, do something they love is something that's super cool too. So it's been it's been an amazing experience, man. So nothing but positive vibes over here, man.
Yeah. And then this weekend, you know, again, you weren't on last week, but last game on the strip there in Vegas, they're going to Henderson next week. And I heard that, a bunch of Bandits fans are going, which is kind of cool.
I mean, again, you can kind of attest to it. And there's definitely one guy, he comes every game, every away game. Again, every game I've been, he's been there. He just flies and shows up and says hi in the hotel. Absolute beauty. But like, again, Panther City, there was, I don't know, there's a couple
lot of Bandits people.
Yeah. Like, so again, I expect to see a ton of Bandit fans in Vegas. And then, you know, obviously like they're super passionate. And, you know, it's not a bad excuse that, hey, we're going to go watch our favorite lacrosse team in Las Vegas as well. So, totally. Yeah, I mean, I guess we expect to see a lot of Bandits in Vegas. And then again, like, I didn't even realize, but, you know, a Tucker Lymphoma Night too, which is something super cool. So I've got to play in one of those for Rochester, and then now I get to do it for Buffalo. And I think, not that any of them are any less special, like when I played for Rochester, but the first ones that started it were Buffalo, right? Cause Willie was in Buffalo when it all went down. So again, kind of super cool that we get to do it playing against Willie, obviously who's coaching Las Vegas. So again, really cool. Really pulls on the heartstrings from like my standpoint, and just makes you appreciate, you know, the game and playing for something bigger than the game. So that's super cool. So we got to look at the jerseys and whatnot. So super excited that's kind of the way we get to cap off the season too, which is going to be fun.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. I don't really have a whole lot to add. Garrett Billings this week, really good interview. Talked, you know, a lot about, you know, his career, his career and his time in the league, but also about the league now. And I think it's, you know, one of the interesting things about our league is, especially with us doing this media stuff, is like a lot of older players or retired players are like affiliated to a team somehow. They're coaching or they're scouts or something. So it's cool to see a guy like Garrett who's going to a lot of the games and watching a lot of the games who's not actually affiliated with any of the teams. So really appreciate him for coming on. So as always, this interview is brought to you by Lucky Penny Media. At Lucky Penny Media, we are a full-service marketing company without hefty agency pricing. We understand your brand is everything to you, and when we're working together, it means everything to us. You're more than just a client, you're a partner and a teammate. Our philosophy is simple. You grow, I grow, we grow. Here he is, Garrett Billings. Alrighty, this Langley, BC native played more than 120 NLL games for 5 different franchises. He's one of the most winningest players in recent memory. He won 2 Minto Cups with the Burnaby Lakers, was part of the 2006 Virginia Cavaliers team that went undefeated, and also won an NLL championship with the Toronto Rock in 2011. He also crossed paths with Pauly while playing for the San Diego Seals. Welcome to Back of the Bird, Garrett Billings.
Thanks for having me.
Did I get all that right? Or
sorry, yeah, that was great. Brought me back.
What'd you say, Paul? I cut you off there.
No, I just feel like this is like long overdue. This is like one guy, your name's always been brought up, and like a guy like GB, obviously like a hell of a career, but a guy who's pretty like, I wouldn't say vocal on Twitter, but like a guy who makes a lot of sense on Twitter in the lacrosse world and says some stuff that's like, hey, yeah, we should be doing that. So I think your name always got brought up, and now it's nice to finally get you on here, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, I type up a lot of tweets that I end up deleting too. But if I'm motivated enough to actually press send, I really mean it.
You know, that's a good like not to get like too deep here. That's a good way to live your life. It's like type it up, maybe sit for 5 minutes. If you still believe it, then send. There's a lot of people out there who just let it fly. So, Pauly, on that note, I thought like usually we start kind of like chronologically, but I thought like it's pretty clear through your tweets that you watch a lot of lacrosse, a lot of the NLL especially. So maybe just kind of like what have you thought of the play this year? And I know you like to talk about the rules and stuff too, the crease rules and the dunk rules. You know, what have you kind of just, you know, big picture thoughts about the play this season and, you know, kind of where our game is at least in the NLL level?
Well, the NLL, I've always said, it's kind of, the NLL's never been better, never been worse. And when you look at it, and so I'm in the Vancouver market right now, and, you know, after you stop playing, you know, you're kind of trying to figure out how much lacrosse you're going to watch, how much it fits into your life with what's going on. And actually, my dad has season tickets to the Warriors, and he gets, it's awesome. And he has a, you know, the parking pass under the building, and he actually, he'll pick me up and drop me off after the games too. So literally, you cannot say no. So I went to a couple of games, and, you know, Vancouver has, you know, they kind of have a checkered past with being in Langley and attendance wise. And you just see this product starting to take off, and they weren't even playing well yet. And you can see the building starting to fill up, and the product was awesome. I was like, man, I just love coming to these games. And every time you go, it's like, it's a little bit of a reunion, right? Whether I see somebody I played Langley minor with or junior or whatever, it's just a ton of fun to watch. And then obviously when you're in the building, you can't turn your brain off from analyzing what you're watching too. So it's a really interesting time, I think, right now in the league too, with a bit more expansion. So you can see some teams, you know, the traditional ones that draw, like Buffalo, and, you know, you pick up free agents, stuff like that. They're so strong. And then some of those kind of those outlier ones are a bit, you know, there's some holes there on defense, and you can see how some guys can take advantage of that. That being said, so to answer your question, the level of play, like the game I watched, this TSN game of the week too, is that Toronto Rock Buffalo Bandits game from a few weeks ago. Place was packed. Both teams were absolutely stacked. And I'm like, this product is freaking amazing. Like, you got 18,000 fans. You got Dane Smith and Paul Burn on one side, and then Tom Schreiber and Matthews on the other. I'm like, man, the NLL is an amazing product, and there's no reason to not watch. And I think, honestly, I think we're super lucky to have it, and guys are still in the league too.
What do you think is, I'm curious, kind of like Paulie, I mean, you guys have been in the league for most of the same years, but when you talk about like the actual on the floor, like the game, what do you think are the biggest differences between maybe when you came into the league and now?
I just think everyone's just gotten so much better, like skill wise. Like, I think we've said this before, like, again, you'll still have your traditional D guys, you know, like I'm gonna slot myself into that position. But I just feel like just everyone can kind of play more or less, like way more. I also feel like forwards, just stick skills are better. So whether that's like they started earlier and, you know, they're just that much better, grew up in the game. I just feel like the skill level is just like way better. I don't know about you. Like, I think like the pace of the game is about the same. Like, I don't think like that's changed. I just think the skill level is just like way better.
Yeah, I think that's reflected. I mean, I feel like that's the same across all sports. Kids growing up now are playing so much more that their skill level is so much higher. I will say, I think it was quite difficult to crack. I don't know what your first year was, Paulie, but like I think there was only 9 teams or something. Like, it was pretty hard to crack a roster. Where right now, you know, guys, especially early in their career, they're getting more looks. But yeah, no, the general skill level is increasing every day. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, there's that part of it. And then, yeah, harder to crack into the league, and then like harder to get back into the league too. Like, once you got like let go of a team, like 9 teams, everyone usually had like their guy. So you do see more, definitely more movement, like player wise, just with being more teams and guys. Like, again, I've said it from the get go, maybe off the record or not, but it, like, the more teams you have, the longer you prolong your career. Cause like, hey, everyone's looking for a veteran. Like, hey, let's pick this guy up, right? Like, we're just better get a guy that we kind of know than like a 19, 21 year old that we don't. So that's one thing. So yeah, kind of like almost maybe counteracts my point that like could water down the league. But I also think, like we've talked about before, Donnie, is that there's way more people playing lacrosse, and there's more people that are good enough. Like, kind of back to like when we first started GB, like there was probably enough guys, I mean, probably not enough for 50, but now I feel like there's enough like superstars where, like, again, you look at these kids coming in scoring right away. Like, that really wasn't a thing when we first kind of came to the league for the most part.
Yeah. I think a big part of this league too is being able to make, like, you know, in say October, November, that this is going to be your life for 4 or 6 months. And I think if you were in 20, 21, 22, you didn't know if you were going to crack the roster. So it was quite hard. So it's not like you're, you know, you're banking on moving down to whatever city you got drafted by, because you might not make it. Where I think now it's like, you know, there's pretty good crack, a pretty good shot here, and that it's going to happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny. You know, there's probably, I don't mean this to sound dumb coming from a guy who's just starting his career, but I listen to guys talk about basketball and hockey podcasts, and they're talking about how like guys are more skilled than ever, but they grew up with like trainers and personal skill guys. So they have like better skills than ever, but maybe not like the game sense. And I think we're still a ways away from that in lacrosse, because like the personal skill trainers is just kind of starting now, but it is something kind of interesting, I think, to watch that, you know, as the skill level jumps up, sometimes maybe the quality of the play doesn't always, but anyways, that's kind of a pie in the sky thought, but
cut you off, but that's like a whole nother bag of apples. Like, again, I don't think we're there yet. If that does happen, the game will suffer a lot, because I think like coming from two offensive guys, you need smarts or you can't play in this league. Like, we've seen guys who are great one-on-one, the best skill, but they can't put in a two-man game, don't like, can't see the other side of the floor. Like, I get where you're like, and you see that again, like in hockey a lot, and like basketball, these ones where you can do like the one-on-one skills. It is like a whole nother like topic of conversation. And I don't think we're there yet, but again, as more kids play, like, it will be coming.
Yeah. You know what you do have now though? You have this generation that are the children of NLL stars. Because the league's at that age. So if you think back, like, who was the first superstar of a kid of an NLL player? John Grant Jr., right? So then now we have the next generation. Like, Jeff Teat is ridiculous. Like, he's put those hours in that these NHL players have had, and you see the results on the floor.
Yeah, same Dyson coming. Obviously, there's a bunch of them, but, you know, there's more coming, yeah.
That's the one thing, like, again, like, GB, you got kids. I'm sure they're going to play lacrosse, but, like, just with my brother's kids and like going to tournaments now, like you say, like as a reunion, you go to like a U9 Hamilton tournament. It's like, you see the who's who. And then all of a sudden you watch the game. It's like, oh, his dad played in the NLL. The kid who just scored 70, his dad played in the NLL. It's like, all right, that kid is probably gonna be pretty good for the rest of his life. But
just pretty good, yeah.
My brother always says, like, he's like, yeah, because his son's obviously like really good, but he's like, yeah, my kid's really good because he's been playing for like 5 years longer than anyone. And that's just like the osmosis thing, like just being at the rink, right? Having a stick in your hands, like just following dad around. But there's going to be another, it's going to be interesting to see like the crop of like kids who like keep coming through this league. Cause I think it's going to like happen for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, it's such a natural advantage, right? Like the whole Williams family, like Dyson's such a stud, and Tucker himself. Did you see the stat lines? Like when he was in like nine or whatever, it was like hundreds of goals or something. Yeah.
And to bring it back to hockey too, like you're seeing it a lot in hockey now too. Like all these kids that are coming up, like maybe their dads weren't like superstars, but like I feel like mostly kids that are getting drafted in the first round, for the most part, it's like, dad played pro, like had some sort of like inkling in like hockey or had his like toes in hockey. It's so definitely like you're definitely given an advantage for sure. Like just by having like just the access to that kind of stuff right off the bat.
Yeah. The other thing is like facilities, right? Like just the track is such a leg up, like, especially for Dan's kids, you know, Paul, how many hours have they put in, you know, at the track over the years, just hanging out, right? Being a kid. And as they get older, it'll be more and more like real lacrosse, you know, and they're little kids, they're just bombing around doing what kids do. But, and I think there's, you know, I know the like Langley Event Center, I think always has that turf in, and there's like places in BC where kids can go. And that stuff for the most part is new. Now, I understand there used to be outdoor boxes and stuff, but, and in the States, these like training facilities are everywhere, you know, like where kids can just go get reps. So, it's interesting. It's good for the game overall, but there's definitely going to be two sides to it.
Totally. We're lucky out here. It only rains, or it's only for like a week. It's like, you're back out there in February anyway. But yeah, no, the challenge, my personal challenge too, is you're like, you gotta check yourself. You're like, do my kids want to do this?
Yeah, right.
Right. You don't want to push them too hard. You want to have them have the love for the game, right? Not just because you want them to do it. So yeah, it's tough.
We'll it's find, funny you say that, man, because like when like you don't have kids, it's so easy. Like every athlete is like, my kid want, like I'm gonna force my kid to play multiple sports. And it's like, well, what if your kid just wants to fucking play lacrosse? Like, or what if they don't want to play any sports, right? It's like, it's easy to say, like, in theoretical, like, at my age when kids are a pie in the sky thing, but, like, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, some of these kids don't play other sports, and they do get really freaking good at lacrosse because they're playing all the time. Like, they're, I don't know. Just,
Was your dad a lax guy?
My dad was, yeah. He played junior B in Calgary as a kid and then gave it up. We lived overseas for a long time. My family did. He and my mom did. So we moved back. I was really young. My brother was six. And then the first thing he did when we got back to Canada was went and bought us cross sticks. So I played from basically when I could stand. My brother was like six. So, yeah. Nice. You know, that's a good little segue though, you know, jumping into kind of some of the chronological stuff. How did you get into the game and what was that kind of story like?
Well, I have the, I don't know if you had it too, the natural advantage of having older brothers, right? So I got three brothers total.
Yeah.
Two older brothers.
All three of us. And, all three of us here had that.
Yeah. It's amazing, right? Like you just grow up and like, you know, we actually had like the unfinished basement, like, you had to have concrete on the walls and we put the mesh over the window, right? That's how you grew up. So I don't even remember when I started. Like we just played hockey all winter and, you know, you'd be at practice from as early as you can remember and then you just do lacrosse all summer and that's just what you do.
Did your dad play, or how did the brothers?
It's so funny. He was a basketball and soccer guy, but you know, if anybody's met my dad, he's a beauty. He's an iron worker. So I think he liked the physicality of lacrosse. So he, to this day, like that's his sport. Like he likes hockey too, but he loves lacrosse. So I think he just liked that side of it. And he was always smart enough to, so he's coached and I always tell, you know, we try to recruit young coaches all the time. And I'm like, it doesn't matter if you didn't play, like just come out and like, just be around it. And my dad never played. He was a great coach and he would just bring people that knew the sport and, you know, he just leaned on those guys.
That's unreal. So what's the age difference between you and your brothers then? Like
oldest brother is 6 years older.
Okay.
And then 3 years older. And then my younger brother's about a year and a half.
What did they do in lacrosse?
Oldest brother played junior A for the Bellies.
Yeah.
Second brother played all the way up, played like intermediate, but no junior. And then my younger brother played some like intermediate and junior B. So one of the best things that ever happened to me was when the brother just older than me decided to play field lacrosse goalie. It was like the best thing ever. It was like, so we go in the backyard and it would be like, I could shoot the ball as hard as I possibly could. We set up there. It didn't matter because he's like, because he had that little advantage. He was like, you just don't realize how much of an advantage that is every day, me shooting 50 shots to my absolute max. And then I go to my whatever game on the weekend and the kid looks like, you know, looks like a beanpole in there. It's like shooting in the ocean.
So would you like, go ahead, Donnie. No, go, Donnie.
I was going to say, it's funny when my family moved from Calgary to Toronto when I was like six. And for the summer, for like the first couple of months we lived here, we lived in Etobicoke, my dad's uncle's place. And it was like too small for our family and there was no AC. So all we could do was go outside. So we just played lacrosse like every day for like, you know, 2 months. And my skills jumped so far in that time and it kind of carried it through. It's funny, these like little things that happen.
Yeah,
you know, in your life that end up making it, you know, that seem insignificant and end up making a big difference.
Plus, you got the goalie brother too.
I never took shots on him, man. Not really. He never wanted to get in the net for me. We played a lot together. Like we had a net in our backyard. We played together, but you know, I never really took many shots on him.
Your dad set me up coaching at St. Mike's 1 year, and your brother was the goalie. He's a stud, man. Super calm. Super easy to calm in the pipes.
Yeah. No, that was fun. I guess it's funny. The unfinished basement is now the kids have full turf facilities. That was the OG track. It was the unfinished basement there.
I know. Actually, I got a scar across my forehead here from that thing because my brother was practicing his freaking black backhand or whatever he's doing. I walked in the path and just started leaking, taking a puff in the forehead.
That's unreal. Where'd you play minor?
I played in Langley. So Langley was pretty small at that point, right? So we only had maybe 100 kids for the whole organization. But my dad was pretty good at recruiting, so we'd have like AAA hockey kits. You'd only have 10, but like even at Bantam, we were all like 6 feet tall and athletic. So yeah. We have this conversation all the time, like, you know, is it better to come from a small organization where you're, you know, you have 10 or 11 guys on the roster and you have to do face off and short man and you have to do everything and nobody's getting shortchanged? Or is it better to come from a Coquitlam or Whitby where it's like you got 16 guys on the roster with power play 1, 2, and 3? I think the argument can be made. It's pretty helpful to be from a small organization.
Well, yeah. And like, again, just like kind of going back, like talking to people and their kids, like they'll like ask for advice. And I always say, like, the more you can do, the better you're going to be off. So like, again, when you come from like a big center and you have like studs, it's like, okay, I'm just going to be a defender or whatever. Right. And then you kind of get pigeonholed to that. And that's like, I'm a D guy from 9 years on till hopefully you get somewhere. Whereas like you say, you're a face off guy, you play D, you can kind of do it all. So if you get to a bigger center, it's like, well, if I'm not good enough to play forward, I can play D tranny, I can take face off. So I always try and tell people that too, is like, the more you can do, the better you are. And then who knows, you can work your way into whatever. So, you know, again, you maybe miss out on like winning stuff, but yeah, it's probably better for development, which is like, again, it's like a whole nother kind of conversation, right?
We never won any games my whole minor career. We got pumped the entire time.
Yeah. But hey, it hardens the soul though. Hardens the soul.
Oh yeah. No, for sure.
How did you get to Burnaby then? Because sorry, Paulie, I don't know if that's where you're going, but.
Yeah, that was my question. It's fine. It's just this is what we roll. We're just two pieces.
So how did you get to Burnaby, and how did everybody get to Burnaby? Because you know you guys won quite a lot in those days.
Well, so my first year of midget, U17 now, I played at the end of the year. We just lost out in playing provincials. I think we like lost in the playdown game. So I was able to play up for Surrey Intermediate. So at that time, you had 2 years in Intermediate in BC, then followed by 3 years of Junior. So as a first-year midget, then I played in that tournament with them. And we ended up winning the gold medal in that journey. And I had a pretty good tournament myself. So the next year, instead of playing second-year midget, I played Intermediate in Surrey again. So they had moved their core group up to play Junior A that year. It was like Ryan Tasker, Jordan Hall, all those guys. They had a really strong group. And so I was on this intermediate team in Surrey. I'm not from Surrey. And like, we stunk. Like, we were getting pumped every game, right? And I'm like, okay, so got through the years, all good. And then going into the next year, I'm like, my goal was to get a scholarship, probably like most of us, right? And I saw that the guys that were doing this were all playing like 5 years of junior. And that was kind of the best path. Matt Brown was kind of like the model, right, that I was following. I had a really good friend, Brad Richardson, that was in Burnaby. At the time, I think he played on the Minto maybe that year. And I just knew that was the path. Like, play 5 years junior, have a couple good years, you'll get recruited. And I'm like, okay, so that's what I want to do. So I showed up at the training camp and I'm like, I want to play 5 years of junior. And I think I can make the team, like, based on my past performance. And they're like, you know, we think we want you to play on the intermediate team to like, to bring that program up. And I'm like, I'm not from Surrey. Like, I'm a Langley minor kid. At the time, there was no draft. Like, you're a total free agent. I'm like, I want to play for your G, like I want to play for you, but really strong group. Anyway, so I showed up at training camp. Sounds bad, but they're like, so the junior team was down this end, the intermediate team was down this end. And I'm like, hey, well, here's the moment of truth, right? So they're like, oh, you're down that side, the intermediate. I'm like, all right. That's kind of like, so anyway, I'm like, I don't think I went to another training camp because I'm like, I'm not from Surrey. I'm not here to have another terrible year of intermediate and get our asses handed to us all year long. It's like, I want to play with the big boys. So anyway, I got a call a couple weeks later from Paul Del Monte. And he's like, hey, we want you to come play junior in Burnaby. And I'm like, I can't. I think I'm probably a Surrey. He goes, we don't think you are. So long story short, we had to go through this whole appeal process. And I ended up getting up because I ended up signing the wrong card or something. Some classic Canadian thing, right? You just sign the wrong card. It's like, well, CLA, like, I don't know, they made the rule up like 1962. I don't know. I signed the wrong card and it was now a free agent. So I went and played in Burnaby. So it's like, to this day, it's actually, I'm quite good friends with a lot of those Surrey guys. And it's like, honestly, those are good dudes. And we had a great win in the provincials. Like, I would have loved to compete with those guys. And like, that's what I wanted to do. Didn't work out. And I went to Burnaby. And as you guys know, like Jack Crosby, Paul Del Monte, Dave Locke, And then Kurt Mowalski kind of took the reins after that. Those guys built such an amazing program, and they were the first ones to kind of figure out to like to start recruiting, right? That was the thing. They had the strong Burnaby core to start, and then they started recruiting all these guys, Caleb Toth, and they just kind of snowballed. And I think at the same time, the Burnaby minor program was getting smaller and smaller. So then the recruiting piece had to get bigger and bigger. So by the time I got there, it was like, you know, we had the Geiches really holding down the fort from the Burnaby people, but it was mostly imports or guys that they picked up from places like Langley. Super fortunate though. Like that's like walking into like an NLL style program with that quality coaching.
So who else did you play with? Who are some of the guys that NLL fans would know that you were on the same teams?
Oh, we might be here a while. Burnaby had everybody, right? So it's like, forgive me if I forget anybody too, but yeah. So the first year we probably shouldn't have won, but we beat Victoria to go to the Minto. That was the first year of the round robin. So Matt Brown was on the team that year, and who are the other holdovers from the old? That was like the crossover year from the year before. Gary Binning was on that team. Nick Patterson was his last year, and then there was a big turnover the next year. So we lost that one, and then the next year we brought out like Dane Doby, Jamie Lincoln, and you know Alex and Ilya Geich were kind of the heart of that team. And my good buddy Brad Richardson too on the back end. Mostly like it keeps going. Bob Snyder was on the back end. Cliff Smith was there for a bit. Steph LeBlanc was like an underappreciated guy there, which is so funny to see the trajectory his career went, right? And he was a stud for us, but it was awesome. And Kurt was the coach after my first year, so like I said, he's a super intense guy but super dialed and teaches you a lot.
And then like, but kind of like you said though, like that Burnaby organization, because even like before then, like we would know, but he had like Cam Sedgwick, Andrew Gwinden, Jeff Snyder, like a bunch of guys who also play in the league and kind of won those Mintos before too. They had like a good 5-year run, and then it kind of trickled down into like our age group, which like the 85s, 84s, 86s too, right?
Yeah. So we were out there, like I said, we were out there for that Minto. And then actually what happened was we lost to St. Catherine. So then we go recruit their one of their best players. And then Craig Kahn comes out the next year. And we went with that. And it was actually the year after that Dobie and Lincoln, those guys came out. But yeah, it's a model. I mean, you look at like Orangeville, how successful they are, right? It's not all homegrown guys. Look at Burlington last year. How many guys did they have from the Ottawa region, right? It's, I don't know what they should do. I would love to see some more like standardized rules across the country. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but it would be nice to see like more of a even playing field for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those things that's, I guess, would be tough too, because like you say, even though you could do it, you need like those extra pieces for the most part, not from your hometown to like bring you over the top in most cases, right?
Yeah, I mean,
the problem is punishing the teams that are like giving kids good experiences seems kind of wrong, right? It's like, well, you really want to do is force the other teams to do the same thing, but the money doesn't work. But it's the same argument with senior. It's the same argument with senior A. Should we have a salary cap with senior A? It's like, well, then you're just punishing the only teams that are paying guys. Like, no one, people don't really actually want that.
But yeah, no, it is a tough dilemma. But I mean, from a BC standpoint, you look at like, you know, you say you're the best team in BC. There's no junior B teams to affiliate that are going to impact your roster whatsoever. And then you look at it from Ontario, so you already have a larger center to draw from, and then your affiliate team is bigger than any association in British Columbia. Like, how the hell are you going to compete with that? So I don't know what it should be, but I would like to see something tightened up, because I'm a huge junior lacrosse fan. Like, the junior A lacrosse is the best. Playing in the Minto is the best for your hometown, right? So, but yeah.
So
I was saying, it's funny coming from me because I came from the team with the most recruits ever. And
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I got traded my last year too, so I get it.
How many Mintos did you end up winning, GB?
I won two. Went to five, won two. And I don't know if I'm sure you guys can attest, the ones you lose hurt more, maybe a little bit more than the ones you win.
For sure. So what? How did she give us a timeline of the wins and losses and in all 5 years?
So the first year we go to that round robin that was held in Kitchener. Super cool experience, because you played in the home barns first. So you played North. I played a junior A game in Orange, which was kind of cool. Played one in St. Catharines. There was a huge brawl. And then we ended up losing in the kitchen around Robin. And then the next year we played in New West and won, with Craig Kahn and Ian Hawksby group. And then the year after that, we actually went to Edmonton, which was super random. It was my first year of college lacrosse too. So I had to fly back. I was late. And we ended up beating Six Nations in super dramatic fashion. Like, there was like a goal called back late. And then there was like, we went to overtime and then they didn't realize it was sudden death. And then they ran onto the floor like they won. And then they had to pull them back and then we beat them. It was like, and then the next year we played in Six Nations. They hosted the Minto and we ended up losing. But that was the one where Peterborough won. So the Peterborough and Six Nations played in the final. Yeah, that was kind of that was a super frustrating one because our team was so stacked. That's one of the ones that really stings, right? It's just those things that happen, right? Like I think Bobby Snyder was the defensive player of the year in Junior A, and then his back just like tightens up for the tournament and he's done. And you're just down this massive piece, right? Those things that happen. And then we lose in the semi of the Sean Evans show, which we've all seen and been victim to. So, you know, they had a great win there. And then the final, so this one, like I said, where the losses hurt more. So Shawnee Evans ended up playing Six Nations. And then we played them in the final, Minto Cup final. Very last game of my junior career. We're freaking stacked, right? And end of the first, 8-1 for them. And like separated my shoulder in the first period. And it was like, you know, it just couldn't have gone any worse. So it was a painful way to lose, but you got to look back and reflect and be like, hey, in sports, it doesn't always end great. You had, you know, two Minto Cup wins and got you where you wanted to be and a ton of good friends and memories. So yeah, those 5 years were a lot of fun.
So you mentioned, you know, kind of switching subjects a little bit. You mentioned the scholarship and going to Virginia. I actually read a little bit of the story right before this about how Coach Starja kind of found you. I think Jamie Monroe recommended you or something. And then, but from your perspective, you know, how did you kind of connect with Virginia? And obviously Coach Starja is a legend. And what was that recruitment process like?
Well, it was kind of lucky. So like West Coast, we're quite a bit out here. And at that point, like people were still getting missed, really good players. Nobody gets missed anymore. So I had a really good year of, it was pretty quiet recruiting that I had a really good junior year and the phone started to ring a bit, but it was like leading. I remember Dom called me and he's like, oh, we want to come see you play. And I'm like, we're just heading right into Minto Cup playoffs right now. Like, can we just talk about this after? He's like, yeah, for sure. So anyway, it was actually pretty quiet. I talked to a couple of other schools like Notre Dame, Denver, maybe Stony Brook a bit, but it was just starting to pick up. And I remember in the locker room, I said, oh, the coach from Virginia called me, and Chris Manwaring was sitting beside me. He went to Wingate, it was North Carolina. He's like, if Virginia offers you, he's like, just say yes. He's like, just say yes. He's like, that school is amazing. So I'm like, okay, cool. So Dom came up and watched me play and gave me an offer. And I think the way that it worked was because Virginia is obviously a bit bigger recruiting school, so they have a ton of guys go their way, and the guys they can't afford, you know, the 11th or 12th guy in their thing, they would send to Denver to give him names, right? Like he's like, you know, my class is full, but I know this guy's a stud. And I think it was really a one-way relationship where these guys were constantly going to Denver and Jamie Monroe's picking up guys. And I guess Dom called him and said, hey, he's like, I've sent you a bunch of guys. He's like, I need one. Can you give me a name? And Dom had recruited a bunch of my teammates, had Matt Brown there, and he had Brad Richardson and all those guys, but he didn't have any money left for another guy. So he knew I was up here, but didn't have any recruiting dollars left. So that's, he showed the name, and then Dom came up. And a lot of it, as you guys know, especially recruiting Canadians, they don't really know like these college coaches. So a lot of them, they'll just do it based on like what somebody else tells them. It's like, hey, I think this guy can do it. They're like, all right, let's see if we can make the numbers work and we'll see how this pans out. Because some Canadian guys just kill it and some guys, you know, it just doesn't work out school-wise or whatever. So I think that was the case. It was just a stroke of luck. One, that Virginia was like, had money at the time because I think they had a late decommit. And then two, that, you know, Dom has some box cross background and was willing to make the trip. So it all just starts kind of aligned. And then, yeah, man. And then I think I committed before I even saw the place based on Chris Manwaring's recommendation. And then I went down there and I was like, oh my God, this place is amazing. And not just as a place too, but like as a program is just so super fortunate. Yeah.
And then I think, so your first year is the year, you know, one of the great college lacrosse teams of all time, I think 2006, you know, you guys go undefeated. Yeah, you know, that's your first taste of college lacrosse. What's that like, just jumping right into it and basically being on a powerhouse team?
You know, it's funny. I think it's such a unique experience for every Canadian, like depending on where you go. Sometimes these guys go down and they're like, you know, depending on the competition, these guys are a part of a lot of goals, or they, you know, maybe their skill level is higher than the average. But when I went down to Virginia, I was like, you're surrounded by some of the best lacrosse players I've ever seen. And I'm like, you know, I think we all have this belief that playing box cross, you know, we get this finer skill set due to that. And went down there. I'm like, these guys are friggin' incredible. Like, so good. So I was just like, obviously, you know, you try to find your role there, and our role is generally a bit in front of the net, right? Catching and finishing. And there wasn't another guy really there pushing me for that spot. So me, I get to watch, like, Larry, you're just the benefactor of these amazing guys doing what they do. Like, Matt Ward was College Player of the Year. Kyle Dixon, I don't know, like, if you guys watched him much, but like, just so dominant. Like, splits guys, hits, you know, on the run 90, 95 with both hands. So like, everybody's sliding to him, and you're just sitting in front and like, oh yeah, I'll score here. Sure, I'll score here. So it's like, you know, again, the stars kind of align. You do your job when you're asked to, but you know, there's a pretty good fun team to be on. It's always fun when you're winning every game.
When did you think you guys knew that it was like that you were going to win it?
I don't know, like first few weeks on campus, maybe.
No,
Like,
really, that like even in the fall, you're like, yeah, we're going to do it.
Because everybody's just sitting there talking about like, oh, that guy's so good, this guy's so good. And you're like, we are really good here. And so, yeah, no, and it wasn't like an arrogance thing. It's just, you know, when you're around the sport a lot enough and you see that level of talent, I think we got a chance here.
And then, you know, I'm curious about like, I'm always curious about championship teams, especially ones like which are so dominant. Like, what was the like demeanor like of the team? Was it like a pretty intense group, pretty like fun loving group? You
It
know,
was it was
yeah.
more it was fun loving. And I was kind of like, I like joke about this, but like, I don't know. Winning isn't hard. Winning's easy when you have the right team, right? It's like, it's if you have the right horses, it's not hard. You're not grinding out wins. Like, everything works. And if somebody goes down, there's somebody to fill in him because you're so deep at certain times, right? So we were easy going. And I think that when you're that good too, the coaches believe in you too. So then they are kind of even a little more easy going. And it just, you know, you're allowed to make mistakes because you make it up. It's just I hope everyone has that experience at least once in their life, because it's not always like that.
How would you say it was different than the Burnaby teams? Like, obviously back-to-back championship teams there. You know, what was the, because I've seen good teams be chill. I've seen good teams, been on good teams that have been, you know, pretty intense all the time. What was kind of the differences as you win like three championships in 3 years, basically?
Well, I think junior's a little younger, right? So these college guys were like men, and they'd been there before, you know, 22, 23 years old, and junior top guy 21. So Kurt's really driving the show a lot there too. There's a lot of pressure in the Burnaby thing to kind of keep the dynasty going. You know, it was an expectation of greatness, and also Kurt really sets the tone. Like, there was you're if you take half a shift off, even if you're up freaking 15 goals mid-season, like, you're hearing it. So, you know, there was never really an opportunity to take your foot off the gas in that setting. But again, like, especially maybe the team when we won in Edmonton was super tight, like, ton of fun, and those guys that you're kind of friends with life for life after that. So yeah, it's like you said, there's a big mix, and I think Kurt kind of set the tone for that group.
Definitely. And then last question I had for, you know, Virginia. I actually heard this a while ago, but 1 year you came back after a long box season, and Dom gave you either like a lot of time off or maybe even the full fall off. Was that true? And I know how I feel about this. Do you think more schools should give their Canadians some time off after the summer when they
He gave
come
me a
back?
bit, and I think, first of all, I think Dom's one of the most reasonable college lacrosse coaches there is. Like, a guy that can, you know, you can talk to and bring up these concerns, and he can give you a break if you need it. It wasn't a super long break, but it sounds ridiculous. And I see guys going through this now, especially really good guys when they're in junior. Like, if you go on late playoff runs in junior, and then you go right to school and you go on a late playoff run there, and you do that for 2 or 3 or 4 years, you're going to burn out. And I think that both sides need to be more reasonable. Like, junior coach, like, give these kids a couple weeks off when they get back. Otherwise, you're just going to lose them down the road. Because the reality is, when you're at school, you can look at your calendar, and I think that some of these junior A coaches can't relate. Like, you look at your calendar, you got like 8 days off in the next 2 months. Like, you're playing lacrosse every single day. So to do that year over year, like, it is a bit you know, a bit concerning because you see guys could burn out. So if any young guys are listening, like take a week or two off when you get back. Like it'll be intense to go to your playoff run. And yeah, it's how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I took I think 2 or 3 weeks off after my Orangeville experience, and they asked me if I wanted to go back, like start playing again, and I said yes. And I should have said no. I should have asked for like another 3 weeks. Like I wasn't ready mentally. I was just burnt out, and I saw it with other guys I played with at Cornell too, who I think probably could have taken some more time. And it's just really tough in college because you come back and your American teammates are fired up to get going, and it's a big culture setter at most colleges. Like your first couple weeks back, you're trying to show that you're in shape. You're trying to show the freshmen how to do things the right way. And I think you need to like protect your players from themselves a little bit, because like very few guys are going to say like, no, I don't want to play while my buddies are playing. But if I was a college coach, I'd say take a month, month and a half. Like,
totally. I think there's a couple things too. Like, so you get back. So Virginia, say you're going into late May, Labor Day weekend, and then you get back and your first, you know, your coach wants you back for that Wednesday game or whatever. And you couldn't score if your life depended on it. Cause you're going from shooting on this giant net to, and then junior, we're playing on 4x4. So I'm trying to, you know, you're trying to hit the size of a teacup and you can't score. So you're super frustrated. Right. So then, anyway, that comes back. You go late in the playoffs, goes like August, and you get to like, you know, get back in that first week, like you're talking about. And then a month goes on, you're still in it. Like you can understand how guys aren't excited to do like that loose ball drill in friggin' October. Right. Like you're on month like 11 of lacrosse. It's like, I could use a break. So no, I think if everybody's aware of that, just like, especially for the high level players, because those guys are generally getting traded to like cup teams going on mid-tier cup runs. Like, so yeah, you look at like Connor English and those guys, the young guys, like, hey, take a week or two off and just recharge the batteries and you'll be better for it.
No doubt. Paul, should we get into NLL stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I agree with all that stuff. I think like that's where injuries start like piling up too. I think like that's one thing too that like, no one takes into account. It's just like when you don't, no matter like how good you are, like recovering, like again, playing for like 2 years straight, a year straight, like it's just usually something bad, not bad, but usually something's bound to go right. Like, so you'll be better off, like just for everyone to be healthy, and it'll be better for you in the long run. And I know like, again, it's tough to sit on the sideline, especially as an athlete. Like you want to get in there, but like you say, like the coaches sometimes or trainers or someone needs to protect these guys from themselves and just say, listen, like we know who, like especially say the high level guys who your spot's there on the team, like just, which again, you don't want to be that guy, but it's like, hey, like we know who you are. We know what you bring. Like just chill out, give yourself some time, get healthy, get recharged, and it'd be better for it in the long run, right?
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, I actually took my first year of senior A off heading into the NLL year, and it was a great decision, you know, just to recharge.
Yeah, I was gonna do that too. It ended up being the COVID summer, but I had the same thought. I was gassed by the time I was getting to the end of my junior year.
I think the thing is too, just to, on that one more, like your friends and family don't really understand, right? They just see the games and they don't really like. Especially your parent, like everybody's super fired up to see you play and watch you play. And you're like that's great, but like we've all been practicing literally every day here for a long time.
So let's go NLL. So obviously first round pick. Where was the draft? And then like going into it, like you talking to teams and like kind of take us through that whole draft experience. We like to like kind of get the whole background of like how it went down for you.
Yeah, so there was a bunch of, that was like Zach Greer, Ilya Gajic, Cliff Smith. I think, did Sid go first that year maybe? It was just telecast. Like it was like a webcast. And actually Colorado had the 4th and 5th pick. And they told me they were going to take me. So I like, in my head, I was like at home. I was living at my brother's house and just working for Shaw Cable actually at the time. I was like, oh, okay, I'm moving to Colorado. My plan was to move down there. I was going to try to get a green card. All this stuff, right? So that was the plan. And then the draft comes up and, you know, they drafted Ilya and Cliff right ahead of me, Colorado did. And then Toronto drafted me. And I was like, kind of surprised because Terry had called me. And I was like, oh, well, I think I want to Colorado, but, you know, didn't put too much thought into it. But as a Vancouver guy growing up, you're bred to hate Toronto. It was different back then, as you guys know. Like the Leafs got all the coverage and the Canucks got bumped and stuff like that. It's just like the total center of the universe thing, right? So I'm like, I don't want to go there. Anyway, I'm the type of guy that whatever the experience is, like you just jump in and do it. It's like, okay, this is where you drafted. Let's move there. So ended up moving there, and there was this team that was like, you know, total rebuild with Terry and Troy now new in, and they just come off a couple terrible seasons and really weren't living up to that Toronto Rock lore. So I went in, it was like super intense training camp, but you could tell, especially when, you know, Colin Doyle getting traded back there, you could tell things were going to happen, and Steph was there with me too. And then we just kind of came out like guns blazing. I think we played, Paul, were you in Boston? I think at the time.
What year is that?
2010.
Yeah,
because there was a big brawl. You fought Colin that game. So
yeah.
Training camp at the time, like training camp back then was shorter, and it was like a whirlwind, right? So you have like this huge roster because you're doing a rebuild year. You have Terry and Troy, who are like super intense, especially Troy, and you just don't know what you're gonna get. So then we go into this first game, and it was just like you know, things just like click, and we had a good game, and I had a good game myself too, and you just tell like, oh, we're like a pretty good team. So then things just kept getting better and better. And I think Toronto has this huge advantage too, being that like nobody has to travel. So you get like, I think there's like a 3 or 4 game boost you get out the gate. So then we like, you know, whatever our record was, we were on fire early in the season. So it's just a ton of fun. Colin Doyle back in Toronto, Steph LeBlanc having a big year, myself. And just like, I don't know what your thoughts are on offense, Donnie, but I'm a big believer in just balance. Like you just need the right pieces. Like you need a righty kind of guy carrying the ball, a lefty guy carrying the ball, a couple of good hard pick setters, and then you could the sum of all the parts is a lot greater than all the individuals. And I think we just had that chemistry in that group with Blaine Manning and Casey Burns and Colin and Steph. So yeah, it was another one of those years where you're just like, hey, we can win any single game here, and things are going pretty well. So it was a great way to kick off the career. Kind of funny, you know, you talk about the NLL. I think it's a very different experience depending on where you get drafted to. Like I said, I didn't kind of anti Toronto, and then you move there as a young single guy. And it's like, yeah, I think I met my wife first 2 weeks I was in Toronto, and living downtown in the city is like, I don't think there's a more fun city to live in for a guy like us. So it's, yeah, it's that the stars kind of aligned on that.
So that would have been T and Troy's first year too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I can only imagine that training camp. They would have been trying to set the tone out of the gate.
I got absolutely lit up by Troy the very first time. I didn't play that summer. So it's just like the first thing. I really like Troy as a coach, but you guys know he's an intense dude. So he's like, he wasn't super pumped about my fitness level at the time, and he let me know quite vocally.
It's unreal.
And then you guys win the next year, right?
Yeah, we went to the final that year. I thought we should have won that year.
Like that's when you lost the final to Washington, right? Okay.
To Washington. Yeah. There was like a critical moment. So we got that early boost, and I think we actually went on a slide right into the playoffs. I think I went on a 4-game slide or something. I can't remember. But and then the NLL playoffs at that point, like you just got to win 3 games and you're a champion. So you end up in Washington, and we were playing well, and Paul Rabil did a crease dive, just absolutely took out Whipper, and it just kind of changed the complexion of the game. And then they ended up winning. It was kind of cool that we then got to get back at them the next year with that same strong group, right? And they I don't know how they did it, but they talked Whipper into coming back for one more year. And I don't know if you guys watched that game. Super cool. You guys dream of going out like that, right? Like Whipper's farewell, and then you go out and he was a stud. And I think Washington might have actually outplayed us in that game. And you're able to send him out a champion. And pretty cool.
What was that? Sorry, go ahead. Go.
Oh, the other part too is like I was a huge Toronto Rock fan growing up. Like first team on TV. Like, you know, I remember pushing the couch right up to the TV and watching like Caleb score that goal, right? So it was pretty cool for us to bring a championship back there, and you know, that building had 14,000 fans in there, and it just felt like a big deal. Maybe probably more than you, Don, but we weren't used to seeing full buildings as lacrosse fans growing up. it wasn't a guarantee. So to be in, you know, in the Air Canada Center, Toronto Rock winning a championship, it was kind of a dream come true.
100%. And then just like, I guess just like touching on, like you brought up like Terry and Troy, but like, and then Doily and like Whip, like coming in as a young guy, like who was kind of the guys to take you under under their wing and like kind of help you through like the whole thing? Or were you kind of like just on your own, or like how'd that kind of all work out for you?
Oh, I would say Blaine Manning for sure. Like he worked downtown and we practiced in Six Nations. So like you're leaving on a Tuesday at rush hour, that's a 3-hour drive. And Blaine would drive us. And just the type of person Blaine is too, like, you know, just kind of guy that I looked up to. Like, oh, it's good. He's a good family guy. He's a great lacrosse player, like takes care of people around him and like super successful and wanted that. Like that's for me, him early on, I'm like, you know, he was the guy I really looked up to.
Let's finish the career and then let's just get back into kind of like things you want to see change. But let's go through just like a little bit of the rest of the career. So like super successful, like for those years in Toronto, obviously like putting up big numbers and then hit a little bit of the injury bug and then kind of take us through like those years and then coming back and being successful again.
Yeah. So those next 3 years in Toronto, that's like an athlete's dream, right? Like you're approaching your prime, and we talk about that chemistry that we had on our offense. So it was just like, it was so much fun. Like probably the most fun I've had playing lacrosse, because you could scout the other teams. You knew that your team was strong enough to beat whatever kind of they threw at you most of the time. It was just, and you're playing confident and you're hitting your shots. It's just like things are flowing, and it was a ton of fun, especially in Toronto where, like, you know, the Rock are kind of a big deal. You could ask anybody in Toronto who the Rock are, they know who it is, right? So it was probably some of the most fun years of my life playing lacrosse. It's pretty cool. So going into the end of the season, like have a game in Vancouver, it was like 3 games left of the year. Actually my whole family's at the game. So bring them all up to the game, right? We're crushing Langley early or Vancouver early. And anyway, end up going to the net, going underneath. And I hear, like, I think it was Tyler Garrison, not his fault at all, but pulled me back this way. And then I felt him deliver a check here. And I felt it go through my body and my right knee just popped, right? And I was like, oh, I just did my ACL. Shit. So anyway, that's what it was. And so I ended up missing that season and getting surgery in the off season, which surgeon did an amazing job. Like, literally never even hurts anymore. And then in the off season, I think it was just one of those things where it's like, you know, every lacrosse player has this moment. I got married that summer and she was pregnant shortly after that. And, you know, you just have this moment where you're like, okay, well, so at some point we got to grow up here, right? You look at what you're doing. And I was planning on going to fire school that summer, but obviously the knee injury derailed that. And I think at the same time too, the league and maybe the Rock were struggling a bit, you know, financially. So I think there was just all of these factors came together. Oh, and Terry ended up, you know, having a heart attack, and he was out of commission at that point, but he hadn't passed yet. So it was just this weird confluence of factors, right? And we just literally could not come to an agreement, myself and Jamie. And it was like, you know, I look back, I'm super appreciative of things Jamie did for me in those years. We had together in Toronto for 5 years. Amazing, right? So it just really sucks that we couldn't figure it out. We just could not get on the same page. And, you know, based on the advice from the surgeon, you know, it didn't matter to take longer. Like, the plan was always to take closer to a year than try to rush back. So it was at the end of 2014 season. So you're already missing the most of 2015. So in a weird way, it kind of like took the pressure off. Nobody was asking, like, you know, how come you're not playing yet or whatever, right? So long story short, we were not going to come to an agreement. And actually at the last minute, Kurt Steyer. So at the time I had signed the year before, it was under league wide average. So that means you're a restricted free agent. This clause that, like, nobody ever got restricted free agency offers at that point, because I think all the owners would get pissed off at each other. So Kurt Steyer's actually made me an offer. He's like, he called me. He goes, what the heck's going on? And I said, explain the situation, can't come to an agreement. It's okay. Well, I'll just, he's like, what do you want? What do you need? I'm like, oh, well, if you make me an offer, then they have to match, and then or let me go. So he did, and he made me an offer. And then I guess at the right at the deadline, I guess, I don't know why, I might have missed a call from Jamie or something. I think I was actually at my grandpa's funeral and I missed a call. And I think it was like literally this call that would have happened and we maybe would have sorted it out, but it didn't have happening. So at the last minute, I guess they had to organize a deal with New England Black Wolves for for Kevin Crowley. And I guess they pressed send on that deal with like literally seconds left before the trade deadline. So kind of this crazy outcome, right? So you go from whatever, taking a year off and doing all the rehab and stuff, and end up in New England for, I think it was 6 weeks left in the season. I played 8 games and I got down there. You go from the Toronto Rockets, like we are stacked and like super fun playing. And you go to this New England Black Wolves roster that you're like, you know, there's zero chance of making the playoffs. And it was just a totally different scene. And you're playing out of a place that has like, yeah, it just wasn't, it was not Toronto. So whatever, that went by in the blink of an eye. And then I think in that off season, my mom ended up getting sick. So she passed away from brain cancer, but in that off season. So I'm like, man, I've been in Virginia for 4 years, been in Toronto for 6. I'm like, I want to go home, spend some time around my family. I was friends with Chris Anderson too, right? So the writing's on the wall, you know how this is going to end. So my wife was gracious enough, you know, she's Toronto born, her family's all there. We had a young kid too. So we moved out to Vancouver and I started working and good friends with the guy that runs the Langley Event Center. And he knew I was in town. He's like, oh, why don't we get you traded to Vancouver? Then you can come do like the community stuff here and whatever. So we kind of organized that in the off season. So then trade happens, end up in Vancouver. They actually had a pretty talented roster, but for some reason that roster couldn't figure it out. Right. I don't know if you remember those years, like Reese Dutch years and myself, Corey Small, you look back, there's some talent on those rosters, but we couldn't figure it out. So right as I was getting kind of picking up again, you're really just feeling off the knee injury. Then they traded for, or they fired Dan Perreault and then brought in Jamie Batley. And, you know, we're not really on the same page lacrosse wise. And you could kind of tell that it was going to go that way. It was, you know, we just didn't see the game or the world the same way. So funny enough, and then my friggin' ankle goes too. So you're like, you're just coming off an injury. This team's a little bit, you know, all over the place. And now I'm like, oh, great, I need surgery again. So it was kind of a tumultuous year. And then you go into the next year. So have the offseason, you come back the next year. And I think it just, same thing. The Vancouver team just could not figure it out. So it was not enjoyable, right? There's constant rotation of players in the roster. You guys have been there. You can talk about how easy and fun the years are, and then you go to a team that's struggling. You're like, it is not fun. Does any team meet more than a losing lacrosse team?
Yeah, exactly.
Like team meeting. You're like, I've never won a game because of a team meeting, guys. I've never have.
You'll solve all the world problems in it, though. You'll solve all the world problems in it.
Yeah. So you get to, I think I only played a handful of games, and, you know, we talked about earlier, like, you know, I think I had 2 kids at this point, and, you know, tumultuous couple of years, 2 surgeries. And then I got an offer to be from the Surrey Fire Department at that time. Right. And I was just like, you know, all these things together, I'm like, it's just time. Like, you got to make a grown-up decision at some point. And, you know, so I took the offer and I let Vancouver know that I couldn't finish a year, and that was it. Right. Cause if you get hurt, then you kind of lose the thing. So I wasn't sure how I felt about the sport at that point. You know, after a couple of years like that, you go from, I can kind of reflect that I was super lucky in the Virginia and Toronto years, right? And sometimes it doesn't go your way. And I was lucky enough to have a new career, amazing career. So then, you know, do my probation, and, you know, you start working out around the fire hall. And then San Diego got a team, right? And you're here in San Diego, and then you hear who's running the team, Pat Merrill. Then they hire Josh Sanderson. And I'm like, oh, those are two awesome teammates, two of my favorite teammates from Toronto. And then you get a call, and you're like, hey, you know, Josh is like, hey, we want you to come down. He's like, we think you could still play, and we want to have you play the same role you always did. And I'm like, dude, I'd play for you guys anywhere. Like, wherever you have a team, sure. It just so happens that you're in like the nicest destination in the league. So we go down there, and Patty obviously did an amazing team of putting that expansion roster together, right? Like, to jump out of the gate like that is smart enough to play with Paul Dawson and, you know, Bucky. And same thing, you just have one of these teams where the chemistry is just right. You just got the right mix of guys. And I honestly think if, like, Austin Statz tore his ACL, if he didn't go down that year, like, you know, we actually could have had a decent run. So, yeah, it was kind of a fun way to go out. I think at the end of that year, I decided, I was like, I was done. Just when you're balancing all these things, you're like, you know, but at the end of the year, I was like, you know, it was fun. I think I'm ready to hang it up. So that was the end of that year. Yeah.
But, like, I guess to, like, put a tie a bow on it, I mean, obviously you'll be able to articulate better than I am, but, like, you go through, like you say, like, great years, where you're having success as like an individual and a player to like injury riddled, not only injury riddled, but then like tough years lacrosse wise, like with teams, semi-retire and then get to kind of come back, at least play well, get back to your old self, play on a winning team and kind of like tie a bow on and be like, this is like the, obviously everyone wants to go out with the swan song, you say like with Whipper and winning the championship, but at least you kind of get to go out on your own terms. Like, hey, I can still play. We were competitive. We had a good season. It's like, at least you can kind of like leave fulfilled, like the way I take it from you.
Totally. I did end up playing one more kind of cup of coffee in Buffalo, but no, you're totally right. And I think it also like kind of reinstills your love for the game a bit, right? And the league. And I think that, you know, I think there's 15 different teams, so there's 15 different experiences. And some teams are doing it great and taking care of their guys, and obviously some teams are not, right? So I think as an individual, if you're listening to this, you know, it's just like, at some, not to be selfish about it, but you got to look out for yourself a bit. Otherwise, the outcome's not going to be good anyway for you or the team. So it's like, yeah, I was, like I said, I think, and I'm super thankful to those guys in San Diego, like Govett and Pat and Josh for giving me that opportunity. Because like you said, it is nice to come back and put a bow on it. The guys in Buffalo, so I wasn't going to play. Certain personal circumstances, I ended up, like, I literally had not picked up my stick because I wasn't going to play. And then things changed in like in January, and I decided, I'm like, oh, I should look for an opportunity to play. And you look at this Bandits team, and they're pretty much the same roster as now. I'm like, these guys are stacked. I'm like, I'll go fill up water bottles and try to win a ring with these guys if I have to. Unfortunately, you know, at 30, mid-30s, you know, you can't really, it's a lot harder to play yourself into shape. Or show up to camp, I'm just like, these guys are fast, man. These guys are fast. Like, now you're lucky. Like, well, I guess you're experiencing it now, but Buffalo, talking about teams that do it right, like, it's so professional. And JT is like, so, because he's been through it all, so he doesn't overreact about anything. I remember, like, you know, you call him like, hey, I can't get my shift covered Friday at the hall. He's like, okay, see you Saturday for shoot around. Like, that's actually not standard across the league to have a coach that has that level of understanding. So it was super cool. I wish I could have contributed more than I did, but it was a cool way to go out. And I'm actually, to see those guys win, was super happy, because they're like, as talented as they are, there's like, you know, there's no big egos. That is an amazing room to be in, as you can attest to, right, Paul? And they're fun to watch too.
100%. So yeah, man, honestly, this has been great, but kind of like we talked about, like at the start, just like, you know, you're watching the game now and kind of like, you know, what would you like to see like change? Like what would you do to make the game better offensively, defense? Like what are your thoughts on the game now? But like, or what are some things you'd like to change or see differently?
Yeah. I mean, it's small things. So I think the NLL rules are amazing. And I think if summer lacrosse could just adopt them tomorrow, it would solve so many problems. So it's just small things. Like, I hate the dunk rule. Like, you couldn't score in the crease before. Like, what's the reason the crease isn't a full circle? It's because we played in hockey rinks, and 100 years ago, they didn't want to drill holes in a different location. So they put the crease where it is, and then they had to cut the back off, half off, so it wasn't too close to the boards. So, like, the outcome of that now is that you have guys that can do a dunk while they're standing there. Like, it's ridiculous. So it's like, if you want to allow the dunk, sure, whatever. But, like, make a full crease at the very least.
Yeah.
I've actually never considered that to this ever. Why the shape of the crease is like that, but you're absolutely right. It's because of where the holes in the cement are in Canadian rinks.
Yeah, and they didn't want to drill new holes. So now 100 years later, you got guys like literally dunking from like standing position. Why are you allowed to hit, we can debate this, but like, why are you allowed to hit the goalie or the post with your stick? It's like, okay, whatever. I'm not like as hard on that as the big one, but it's a little bit silly. And then the other one's like, I just hate seeing plays happen over and over and over again and guys get away with it, like defensive plays. So like this trip move, like it drives me nuts. It's like, guys don't just fall over in the open floor. Like, so then you slow it down and you see like a foot behind him and then he throws him over the top, right? And you're like, and then the problem is it's super effective too. So the refs can't see it, especially in summer. You'll see one guy do it and he's like, just guys falling down left and right. Like, I don't want to like, not calling a guy out, but like Billy D was, there was one year, like I just watched guys fall, like four guys in one shift. I'm like, and then,
around.
What's that?
Just judo throwing guys around.
Oh, and then the refs like, how did he fall over? You're like, oh, I don't know. I watched some film maybe. So, Billy is an absolute beauty. And then the other, it's just all small plays like that, right? Like, I feel like they're letting too much go on the off. Like, the offensive guys, they're letting them cross check now. Like, they have to be hammering guys. Like, maybe reel that in a bit. Yeah. And then this, you guys have seen that call, like the crowbar check and field across.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You, you should learn it, Paulie. It's like, it's a free turnover. So they just like, it's like pretty much like a mini arm bar and then they toss you.
All right.
So you ever seen, do you remember seeing Adam Jones on the, like when he pressed guys on the
power play? I've got put on.
Just like that, but one more. Yes. Yeah. So you like kind of high center him and then up and over.
Okay. So like, all right. I'll
YouTube. My take is, sorry.
I'll YouTube it when I get off here.
Yeah, it's probably a lot of the field deep middies do it. You come like, if this is like, you come up with your top hand of your cross check and you try to get basically between the armpit and the arm. And then once you're there, you can just chuck guys. I think that's what, if I don't know if that's what you're talking about, but that's what I'm pretty sure you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. It's just all these little moves where a guy finds like one little thing that, you know, you can dump a guy in his ass and it's like, it just happens over and over and over again. You're like, come on, man. I feel like you see the slew foot out there a bit more now too. Drive me anyway. So I see that. I'm watching games. I'm like, how am I the only person seeing this? And you know, the announcer's always like, oh, what a great turnover. I'm like, oh, come on, man.
We anyway, were talking about it the other day in the car for summer lacrosse. We gotta get the small sticks for the goalies. Like, you wanna 100%. overnight, like everybody wins. More people can score, it'll open up your game and produce like the, you know, the brutality, I guess you could say, of the summer game, because you have to get to the middle, and then also it'll prepare your goalies to play in the NLL too, which you should want. Like, I feel bad for the goalies; they have, you know, basically two different sports that they play. So
yeah, have you seen a U17 game lately? The kids are the same size as us, and they're playing on a 4x4 with a giant Woody. It's like the games are like 2-1, 1-0.
Yeah.
Last question, we'll do two more, we'll get your number, but last question for me, like, obviously, you know, I got to play a half season with you and just kind of know, like, and even just talking to you now, like the brains behind the game, like you see the game a little bit differently than most people. Like, any thoughts of, you know, coaching, getting into the cross, like back into NLL, anything like that?
I'd love to, but maybe when my kids are grown up and out of the house, right? Like, It's really hard to justify, like, this. It's like 7 months of every weekend, right? So it's really tough. And when you're playing, it's different. And maybe your kids are younger, not even born yet. But at this point, like, you're literally trading something that you want to do for spending time with them. So I can't do it yet. I would love to in a different world, but yeah, maybe 10 years if I'm still relevant at all.
You'll always be relevant. Just say check the stats, baby. Check.
Hey, that's what your Twitter account's for.
Stay relevant, stays chirping.
Yeah. Like, you just every once in a while, don't delete that tweet, just hit send. And he's like, oh, there's GB. He's back. He's still interested.
Well, hey, if you ever want to chop it up, you know, we're always here. If you ever want to come sling some opinions around, we,
all right.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Last question we usually ask, jersey number. Why'd you choose your jersey number?
13. It's because everybody thought it was bad luck. So I'm just like, it's going to prove you wrong. It's really like ridiculous reason you're 10 years old and be like, what number you want? 13 is bad luck. It's not bad luck.
Wow.
Show you.
I like it.
Beauty. Okay. Yeah. One more. We asked Jesse King this last week, and I want to ask it going forward. Obviously you're not still playing, but the question is how old are your shoulder pads, or how old were your shoulder? Was there any piece of gear that you used like the whole way through, any piece of like ironically old gear that you had, or you always kind of stayed up to date?
I used one piece of mesh my entire NLL career.
No way.
What?
That's the one.
Like, you know what's really sad though? I was coaching and I left it at the Ladner covered box and I've lost it.
Oh, it's gone?
Oh, no.
It was just gone after all those years. Yeah. So now I have a warp. It's embarrassing.
Oh, no.
We can get you a stick, dude. Because
I can leave it wherever and it just throws the same forever.
It's unreal.
Wow, same man, piece of mesh. Wow. Yeah, thank you. Problem. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having me. Sorry.
Yeah. No problem, buddy. There was us. I had three other people in the room. So
hey, good luck, Paulie.
Be safe, man. And again, enjoy retirement. And thanks a lot, man. You had a hell of a career. And thanks for coming on, buddy. It was nice to catch up with you.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right. That was Garrett Billings. Great interview. Paulie, I think we both enjoyed that one.
Yeah, no, it was great. Like I said, I got to play a little half season with him and played against him for a long time. And kind of like we alluded into the interview, like he went through some hardships. And again, when he was that year when we played in San Diego, like it was back to like a vintage Garrett Billings, which was like super cool to see. So happy that he got to, you know, cap the bow off. And, you know, it's cool that, like you say, that he's staying involved watching lacrosse. I think a lot of times, like as an athlete, once you're done, if you don't stay like in coaching or scouting or general manager, a lot of guys just like sometimes just leave the game and like we again, like we alluded to in the interview, like get burnt out. There's like, I'm just done. Like don't want to watch it. But yeah, he's a guy who's still watching it, still being involved. So it's kind of cool that he just gets to be a fan and, you know, fire off a couple of tweets here and there.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Yeah, no, it was awesome. Really appreciate him coming on. The one piece of mesh through his whole career is absurd. I don't even understand how that's possible, how it doesn't rip, but credit to whoever made his mesh, I guess.
So, you know, my brother used to do that for a long time too. Like when he was doing the monster mesh days, he would just transplant the monster mesh from one head to another. And then kind of same thing, like by the end, it was like, it was sewed together like in certain pieces, but he did it for a while. Then he finally got rid of the monster mesh and started changing. But that is a wild, wild thing. I wasn't expecting that.
The crazy thing is like the mesh technology has come so far in that time. Like the stuff now is so much better than it was.
Like, we should have asked, like, what was he using?
I was like thinking it was probably Mark Mesh, given that that's what everyone was using at the time.
Yeah, yeah, potentially. That's, which is crazy. So that's hilarious.
Well, good ad for Mark Mesh. If you can find a piece, hang on to it because it will carry you through a 10-year NHL career. So,
So Joel Laval, who's Mark Laval's son, who I played junior with actually in Burlington, and then they were the makers of Mark Mesh. He's still like involved in Buffalo, still does a little bit like stick stringing for guys, but I got him on Facebook. They're selling a bunch, so find Joel on Facebook. They still got, and I think it's only like $10 a mesh, so bring it back, different colors, whatever you want. So yeah, it's a little shout out to Jojo Laval and Mark Mesh. There's still some out there.
There you go. All right, beauty. Good thing to end on. I'm good if you're good.
Yeah, man. That's it, buddy.
All right. Again. Well, thanks to the people for listening. That was episode 114 of the Back of the Bird.
And we'll see you guys with playoff scenarios next week. Peace.